Hi everyone, just a quick note before we get to today's podcast. If you could please take 1 minute out of your day to rate and review the podcast, and of course, please subscribe, it would mean a lot. As always, we really appreciate the ongoing support from all of you and the great feedback we are getting. I hope you guys enjoy today's podcast. Cheers. It is a beautiful Monday morning.
That's not a good start, is it, Jordan?
No.
Let's say it like this.
Try and apply that theory to any other industry in the world.
It's a scam.
I was betting like 70, 80K.
This is the Trademate Sports Betting Podcast, helping you beat the bookmakers. Hi guys, Alex here. Welcome to episode 41 of the Trademate Sports Betting Podcast. This week, I am joined by pro sports bettor, Neil Shah. How are you, mate?
Yeah, good, thanks. How are you guys?
Good, mate. Now, before we get into it, I just wanted to explain to everyone that Neil does actually work for Trademate Sports as a content writer, and he'll also be doing a few videos for Trademate. But, mate, what I wanted to talk about today is you've recently, I don't know how recently, maybe a couple of months ago or maybe earlier this year, you've just made the transition, the big transition from someone that's had a winning betting strategy to actually making this a full-time gig. And I think that's really, really interesting journey for people to be. And I think it's good to have you on early in your career so we can kind of, I mean, hopefully we can stay in contact over the years and kind of check in and see where you're at and how it's all going for you. Because, I mean, it's quite a, I guess it's something that people maybe dream of one day that like betting or have been successful with betting and they think, you know, one day this might be something I want to do. So I think it'd be cool to get your insight on the journey so far. And I mean, even just your journey up until the point where you decided to become a pro sports bettor. So I think that's a good place to start, mate. And just a note off the top to everyone that we're not really going to talk about too much about betting strategies or anything like that, more so about the emotional, psychological side of becoming a pro sports bettor. Might have one or two questions at the end about things that are working for him at the moment, but it won't be kind of based around that kind of chat today. So, mate, yeah, like I said, let's start off with, I guess, your journey from, you know, placing a few bets and making, you know, I guess, as a hobby and then making this a full-time job as it is now.
Yeah, sure. So it's fairly recent for me. So pretty much this summer, although I have had lots of time. So, you know, my day job, my profession, I'm a teacher or was a teacher. And again, because schools were closed, I had a little bit more free time to actually start preparing for this. And then sort of during lockdown, I kind of thought, look, I've been doing this a while. I've been profitable for a while. So, you know, why not, you know, give this a try? So it's kind of a perfect storm this year, I think, for me. And, you know, maybe if some circumstances didn't happen, I might not have done this. I might have kind of carried on doing this part-time. But, yeah, because all these kind of things came together and the stars aligned, it's given me this opportunity to do it. So I'm still quite early, you know, it's still quite early days. Hopefully a year from now, I won't look back at this and think, you know, I've lost all my life savings and it's been a complete disaster, but hopefully not. But yeah, I think that's the kind of journey. So, I mean, I did work for a bookmaker some time ago for a company called IG Sports. They do financial trading now, but they did have a sports division back then. And so I did spend a little bit of time. So I kind of knew the industry already. I didn't think of it as a career back then. I was still quite young. I was in between jobs. And, you know, I was more interested, I was more interested in psychology, in teaching, and I was working in mental health for a few years after that. And basically, some of my experience with that, I think I mentioned, you know, before to you in another conversation that my experience was that pretty much everyone lost. You know, I was taking bets over the phone. I had customers, you know, placing crazy wagers. And I didn't really bet much at the time because I just thought, you know what? There must be a reason why I'm in this office, why all these people are, you know, the people making the money are the company, you know, not the customers. And I never really sort of looked into, you know, how you can actually sort of win at this game and profit. and also the kind of sums involved as well, you know, were quite big at the time for me. They were quite daunting. I think I got to a place where, you know, I was quite settled and this was a hobby. I was thinking, you know, what can I do to get a little bit of extra income? What do I enjoy? What do I spend most of my free time doing? It is literally watching sports. Can I make any money from actually, you know, my hobby? That's kind of the dream. I'm sure lots of people listening to this would feel the same way. So yeah, lots of kind of trial and error, lots of reading, lots of kind of research, and getting to the point now where it's all kind of started to pay off and everything's kind of clicked into place. But, you know, after kind of a lot of time and effort. So yeah, that's where I'm at the moment. So this is kind of my full-time job. But, you know, there is a backup plan, of course, as a teacher. If things don't work out, I'll find some tutoring work. There's always jobs for teachers. But hopefully it won't come to that. And, you know, this will kind of continue as it started. You know, it's gone pretty well so far.
So how did you get over the barrier, mate, of actually making, you know, going, as you said, as a hobby and enjoying it and making a little bit of money from it, to actually thinking, fuck it, I'm gonna make this a full-time job? Because I mean, for me, like I think about it all the time, and I'm you know, I don't know if I'd have the mental capacity, I guess, to ever go pro or anything like that. But it's a major leap from going from, you know, part-time, it's almost like a hobby, like you said, to making this a full-time gig. Like, because you could be the best, I don't know, market reader in the world. You could be the best, sure, the best sports betting market reader you've ever seen. But you could go and lose your first 100 bets and you might be cooked already. So how do you get over that mental barrier?
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's a great question. I think, first of all, you have to have an edge. So obviously mindset is hugely important, and you know, that's something we'll talk about, but you need to have some kind of edge on the market. So, you need to know the basics, you need to understand. So for me, I saw that actually I was making a steady profit month on month. So pretty much every month I was in profit. With most of my strategies, the ones that weren't performing as well, I've dropped along the way, and then I thought to myself, actually, you know, if I had more time to bet, I would make more. I would make more profit. But obviously, working full time, I'm sure a lot of listeners can relate to this. That, you know, you do a full day of work at the office or whatever you do, and you come home and you want to play some bets, but it's tiring. You're already tired from the day. You can't devote as much time as you want to this. So that's what I think slows down a lot of people. So for me, I looked at it and I thought, okay, well, if I didn't have any distractions, I mean, luckily as a teacher, I get summer holidays. So I get an idea every now and again. I can have a week or two where I can just kind of focus on my trading and betting. And I worked out, actually, I would be earning more, you know, from my betting and trading than my monthly salary. And I think that's something that I said I've heard from other traders, that if you're making pretty much what you're making from your day job, or if you were given, you know, that same amount of time every week to devote to it, and if you can make just as much from your betting and trading, that's the time you should really start thinking about going pro. I wouldn't recommend it, you know, until you get to that level. So even for me, you know, there's something I've been thinking about for a while, but, you know, I didn't think I was kind of ready to do it. And even now, it's kind of, you know, some people might still say it's a big risk. But, you know, once you get to that stage, then you can really start thinking about it, and, you know, devote your time to doing this. But, you know, it's completely understandable. Some people want a safety risk, a safety net, and have their income from their day job plus, you know, this as a side income. For me personally, I think that, you know, a lot of people can do that. But what I've found is, now that I've been able to devote pretty much all my working day towards this, my trading has got better, my betting has improved, you know, my decision making has improved. And again, because this is my primary sole kind of focus.
Yeah, it makes sense, mate. And it's something that I think is funny too. We might touch on it later, that the life of a pro sports bettor, most people think that you're probably just sitting on your ass all day having fun.
So my missus thinks, yeah.
Exactly. But it's a lot more involved than that. And it's just like anything, really. I mean, the more time you spend and devote to it full time, the better you get. I want to talk, speaking of your missus, mate, that's one of the questions I wanted to ask, because I know you've told me briefly about the conversations, or I mean presentations, that you had to give your wife to convince her, mate. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, sure. See, and I wrote an article about this on my blog. So basically, that was kind of running through my mind. I felt pretty confident about what I wanted to do. In my head, I knew, you know, I was kind of ready to do this, as ready as I'd ever be. But obviously, you know, I it's not just me. I have a wife, I have a young daughter as well. So again, before anyone thinks I've gone insane and completely lost the plot, giving up a good, well-paid job, I had to convince her of that. So I kind of presented it like a business, because it is, you know, this is what you need to treat it as a business. So I thought, well, what would I do if I needed to get kind of funding or approval for a business? You know, I've got to do a presentation. I've got to sell the idea. So again, you know, we're kind of sitting around at home, and, you know, I prepared, you know, nice flashy PowerPoint, you know, lots of animations and, you know, lots of visuals in there. But with this kind of, you know, the message in there, trying to explain to my wife, because my wife doesn't bet, she doesn't gamble, you know, she doesn't really follow sports much. I think she has the same mindset that a lot of people have, you know, that, you know, gambling is just, why would you do it? You know, just everyone loses, and, you know, how do you even make money from it? So I kind of had to explain, you know, what my strategies were, like how I was doing this. And again, she was kind of grilling me the whole time. She had lots of questions for me. Why isn't everyone doing this? Well, you know, well, what if this goes wrong? Have you thought about this? You know, what if X, Y, or Z happens? And it was great. Actually, it was, you know, it was tough, kind of grueling, but if I can't convince, you know, the people closest to me that this is going to work, then I have no business doing this. You know, you need to be rock solid. I think that's my opinion anyway. I think you need to be pretty confident in what you're doing and seeing this as a business before you take this plunge. You know, if anyone's in the position now where they feel like they might be there, you know, you've kind of got to make sure that you're ready. It's better to err on the side of caution before taking, you know, this kind of big risk and going all out. You know, you can kind of gradually build yourself up to that level. So yeah, that was kind of basically how it went. And I think she understood. I did the same thing. You know, my mom was kind of worried about what I was doing as well. And so I kind of explained it to her. So I think that's been really helpful to get their support. You know, it's huge to have my wife's support doing this. I mean, again, she sort of doesn't pay huge attention. She kind of asked me, you know, did you do well today? Did you not? And I don't tend to look at it day to day. And she kind of, I think that's something that's sort of, you know, difficult to explain as well. But, you know, she is encouraging there, because there is a stigma around this. And, you know, if I told my wife I was going to, or anyone, you know, in conversation with friends, I'm going to trade stocks and shares, I'm going to trade Forex, they wouldn't have the same questions for me. They would think, oh yeah, that's really cool. You know, great. Good luck to you. When I tell people, you know, I've left my job to trade sports, you know, some people are like, well, how do you trade sports in the first place? And then some of them give me sort of funny looks, you know, like I'm selling like weapons, or, you know, or I've decided to become a drug dealer or something. You know, there's a massive stigma around doing this, but it's just like any other job. You know, if you treat it like a business, you know, you will be successful. You've got to put the hours in and you'll get there. You know, you've had people like Harut, you know, come on and saying, you know, he's working, what, 14 hours a day or something, I think he said.
How he does the podcast. I don't know how he does Twitter all the time, because the man, like, I don't even know if he sleeps.
Just a machine.
I mean, he's got a wife. Like, I don't know how he does it.
Yeah, I mean, I need to sort of ask him, because again, you know, same for me. It's not easy. It's not the kind of glamour job that you think. You've got to love it, but you might find that this kind of drains some of the love and passion away. You know, actually this takes away some of the enjoyment of watching sport. And that's something, you know, you should bear in mind as well. But yeah, in a nutshell, that's kind of how I explained it to my wife, to my mum. There's still people who don't really know what I'm doing. And, you know, gradually over the next year, you know, hopefully it'll get easier to explain some time. And hopefully some of this stigma around you know, around this will start to disappear. But that might take a long time.
Yeah, I mean, that was another question I wanted to ask you about how the life of a pro sports bettor is, like, imagined with stars all around it, like a glamour life, I guess, you know, fancy cars, sitting on your ass watching sports all day, all this kind of stuff. It's not really associated with sitting at a computer. I mean, it depends what time zone you're in, at ungodly hours, reading markets, like looking at numbers all day. I'm sure you came in with that kind of knowledge that this wasn't going to be that glamorous.
Yeah, I think that was kind of a key thing for me, sort of knowing that I'd work up to this point, having, you know, knowledge of the market and speaking to people who were professional traders and seeing sort of professional traders. I guess I had the luxury as well from, even though that experience was a while ago, seeing, you know, how the pros, you know, did things and how, you know, how it's a tough job. I mean, you know, put it this way, I'm doing more hours now, you know, significantly more hours than I was, you know, when I was teaching. You know, it's not like I'm working less. I'm working more, but I'm doing something I really enjoy, and I'm kind of combining what I would be doing in the evenings anyway with work. But my day is quite relentless. Again, I wrote a schedule out, you know, for what I do. I have to wake up pretty early. I have no choice. My daughter's, you know, my alarm clock. So she's up at like 6 o'clock in the morning. And I kind of have to split shifts, and I'm a couple of hours ahead, you know, of the UK. So sometimes, you know, there are events late at night. So, you know, I'm kind of a 36-year-old man who needs an afternoon nap just so I can, you know, I can actually trade in the evening and still have the energy and be fresh for it. So it can be, you know, very mentally tiring. You know, I'm sure lots of traders, professional bettors will say that there's the mental fatigue, you know, can be there. So every now and again, you do need to give yourself a break because, you know, sports are just relentless. Depending on what you trade, some sports, they have an off season. I mean, I'm finding this month is just insane because there's so many fixtures. There's such a backlog across so many sports that there's just constants. I mean, you know, yesterday to make a decision between watching tennis, snooker, the Champions League, all at the same time, all things I would have loved to have watched, but there's just so much going on at once that, you need to do that. So, yeah, you have to be kind of strict on putting limits on your time. You are beholden to the time zones you're in. The sports, you know, a lot of people go into horse racing in the UK, I think for that reason, because the races are on during the afternoons. They can generally finish for the evenings. But, you know, obviously if you're trading tennis and tennis tournaments all over the world, you know, you've got to be up super early for things like the Australian Open or, you know, things like that. So it can be quite unsociable and isolating at the same time. So you've got to be prepared for that.
Yeah, I was talking to a Jonas about, and you kind of mentioned this a bit earlier, about the stigma around gambling and having to prove to your wife and your mum and all this kind of stuff. And they might be worried and concerned, and Jonas said the exact same things that you were saying right now when he told his mum at 18 years old that he's going to, I don't think it was mum or his dad, I think it was his, but maybe both, I'm assuming both, that he was going to move over to Thailand at 18 years old and become a professional poker player, which is just insane when you think about it. But he said his main motivation then, and it still is now, is proving people wrong. Because, I mean, just he said, like, basically everyone that he talked to, his friends and family, looked at him and thought, well, I mean, you're an absolute idiot. Like, he'd said that his family's had gambling problems in the past. So I guess people were looking at Jonas and thinking, all right, well, he's just going to be another one of the Yelstads, I guess, that has a gambling problem. So is part of your motivation proving people wrong?
I wouldn't say it's part of my motivation. It would be nice. You know, it would be nice not to have that kind of stigma around it and to have those kind of funny looks and for people to understand it. But I've done this for quite personal reasons, and you know, with a goal in mind. So if I'm profiting, if I'm doing everything that I can and I'm doing it right, and you know, the people who are most important to me support me, then that's enough for me. But you know, it would be nice. But I mean, say with Jonas, does he still face this now, would you say? Like, is he say there's still people who, I mean, at his level now, or has he kind of overcome that?
Yeah, I wouldn't say he faces it now. I mean, you'd have to, you know, if you're close to Jonas and you don't think, I mean, yeah, if you like everyone on YouTube and you think he's a scam, or not everyone, but some of the people who think he's a scam, then maybe you do. But yeah, I mean, I'd say it was more so like his transition from 18-year-old from school to going to Thailand and playing poker, received a lot of negativity there. And the same thing when he went from becoming from pro poker player to pro sports better. It was the exact same thing.
Yeah, and I think that's something, you know, I guess a lot of people who take that leap will face. I suppose for me, I guess I'm you know, in my mid-30s now, had a sort of settled career behind me. So in that sense, maybe it's different to, you know, being very young, like maybe Jonas was at the time. But yeah, it is an inevitability. So, I mean, one thing I'm doing to counter that is, you know, I'd like to potentially work in the industry, if not for a bookmaker, for an analytics firm, something like that, you know, as well as doing my own project. So I'm going to be studying a master's in computer science, and you know, hopefully work towards that. And I think that would be kind of, you know, in a way legitimizing it. When we, you know, say when we move back to the UK, to have some kind of fixed income, I think that's still in my plans. But things like, you know, getting a mortgage, you know, getting kind of credit for things, go to the bank, what's your profession? I'm a professional gambler. You know, I know what they're going to say. So these are things you've got to consider as well. You run it like a business, you can operate like a business, but you do need to have kind of, I think, other income streams as well, or be prepared. You know, that's what you have to do. But yeah, it's a really good question in terms of, you know, let's say, proving people wrong. Don't get me wrong, it would be satisfying kind of at the end of this year to kind of look back and, you know, sort of, and it's been a success. You know, that is great, but I think it's more important, you know, on an individual level, you know, I will know if it's been successful or not, and that's the main thing.
Yeah, and how do you think you're coping so far in the first few months? I mean, I would find it very stressful, like you must too, especially having a one-year-old kid too. Like, how are you coping psychologically at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, that was part of what I'd anticipated, that there were going to be tough times and it would be tricky. I mean, in terms of, I guess, something like this, you have to have a certain kind of temperament as well. Not that I'm like this in other aspects of my life. You know, I can be quite impatient, you know, a bit grumpy, and I wouldn't say reckless, but you know, a little bit careless in my day-to-day life. But when it comes to my betting and trading, I think I have a different kind of mindset, because you know, I am actually quite risk averse in many ways. I don't like to lose, you know, so in that sense I'm competitive with myself. You know, I want to try and, you know, improve all the time. And I think that's helpful when it comes to trading and betting. But you know, there's still times, you know, like last week or the week before, I had a terrible day. I mean, I literally lost on everything. You know, I was trading, you know, 5-6 different events. Everything I was doing was just going wrong. And these were all the same kind of trades I would make every day. And, you know, if you asked me again, you know, would I do the same trades tomorrow? Probably like 80% of them I would. So it just happens, you know. But you know, I'm not going to lie, at the end of that day, I was annoyed. I was kind of frustrated and I needed a little break, you know, from the computer. But that is a very tough thing, the kind of the mindset. Even yesterday, I ended up making a profit on the PSG game, but I didn't think they were going to score. I thought Atalanta were going to hold on. So I traded out of a position that would have actually, you know, made me quite a bit. And you know, that's kind of the most annoying thing sometimes when you do something like that, but it's all part of the game. I think, you have to look at it from a wider perspective, if you can look at it as from a bigger picture, if you've got confidence in your methods, if you know that they work, if you know that you've got positive EV on everything you do, you kind of have to be a bit robotic. I know that's something I think you know, one of your experts mentioned, I can't remember who, but on one of the expert series articles, it was kind of mentioned, basically, if you have a kind of robotic personality, you do quite well at betting. I think there is something to that. You know, if you can remove the emotion from it, you know, you get rid of basically half the problem. You know, if you have an edge and you can stay kind of disciplined and calm and collected, you will make money in the long term if you don't deviate from that. But it's tough. It's not easy. You know, like, you know, even to myself, I think I'm, you know, I'm good at that, but I can still improve. And there are still times where, you know, it can be frustrating. You could have spent ages researching a match, covering all the angles, and, you know, within 2 minutes you might have lost your bet. And it's just, you know, the most annoying feeling. But once you focus on, look, that happened that time, but I'm going to make the same bet, do the same analysis 100 times, and, you know, I'm going to come out and profit at the end of it. And that's the mindset you need to shift. I think that's where the difference between a recreational gambler, someone who bets for fun, and someone who does this for a living, is that they're looking at this bigger picture, this bigger sample size. And if one bet goes against them, you know, they're not going to get too annoyed about it. They'll just, you know, learn from it, learn from the mistake, if there is a mistake that was made, and then move on to the next one.
Yeah. Mate, I wanted to talk about living in the Middle East and betting from there. Sure. And kind of the religious, I guess, restrictions around betting in those areas. Can you shed a bit of light on what it's like to be living and betting from the Middle East?
Yeah, so I've got to be a little bit careful how I answer this. But, I mean, it's an interesting one. Obviously, I'm not Muslim myself, so, you know, I'm not an expert on this. Obviously, maybe someone could comment on this or share their own thoughts. I'd be happy to hear them from an established authority. But in the Gulf especially, there are a lot of ties to betting. You know, technically it's haram, it's illegal, you know, it's not Islamic to gamble. For, you know, many of the similar reasons in other countries, other cultures, other religions, you know, it's seen as something that's, you know, taking that risk. It's not good for society, you know, it's kind of, it's not good for morality of the people, you know, that's a kind of broad view of it. But for example, Qatar and the Emirates, they, you know, do heavily sponsor a lot of horse racing in the UK. They have, you know, the Goodwood Festival last week. It's the Qatar Goodwood Festival. You know, there's a huge race course in Dubai. Yeah,
the Emirates, Emirates are a major sponsor of the Melbourne Cup too, which is
basically
which I assume is like it's the biggest horse racing event in the world.
Absolutely. So it's kind of, there is a disconnect there. I mean, I was doing a bit of research into this and I found out in Iran, you know, which has a very conservative Muslim government, you can still bet on horse racing. So they don't call it betting. They call it predictions. You can make predictions. And there is a little office you can go to make a prediction and win a prize. So, you know, it exists. And there are lots of people who do it kind of, you know, on the black market as well. So when you have a country with such a high disposable income, you know, people with that kind of leisure time, it is going to happen. So, yeah, that's from a general perspective. From you know, the perspective of an expatriate living here, you know, if you're a resident of another country, like I am as a British national, I mean, I was lucky I had, you know, lots of accounts before I came over. I have a UK address. So things like that, you know, that's not a huge issue. But obviously it's a grey area in that sense. But it kind of comes back to the stigma as well, though. You know, for example, you know, if you're investing, like I mentioned, I think the Emirates, they bought the MGM, one of the big hotels in Las Vegas, one of the big casinos in Las Vegas as well. You know, there's sovereign wealth funds that are kind of investing and trading on the financial markets every day. In my mind, you know, trading on sports markets, trading on financials, I don't see a difference. You're still trading on risk and you're still trading on probabilities, and your money is at risk in both aspects. But you know, that's just my opinion on it. So yeah, I mean, it's there's some countries in this region, you know, in North Africa, you know, in Egypt, Tunisia, Morocco, there are casinos, but you know, I don't think they do particularly well because they tax quite highly, and you know, nationals are not allowed to visit them. But again, you know, they can get around that. They might have dual citizenship or second passports, that kind of thing. There's a huge casino in Lebanon, for example, you know, that turns over a lot of money. So it does exist. It's not like a complete, you know, absolute no-go. And, you know, it is more common than you think. But by the letter of the law, you know, and by, you know, by from a religious perspective, it is seen as haram and technically illegal.
Yeah. No, very interesting stuff, mate. Thanks for that insight into the Middle East betting. Only real strategy question I wanted to ask you today. It's the last question I have for you around kind of your betting strategy is I read in an article that you wrote for Toby Alders, Punzeta Pro, who we've had on the podcast before. I think it was episode 31 for anyone that wants to check that out. You said I've had countless hours wasted on poor tipsters, systems, strategies. You've read dozens of books and bought a fair few courses. Tell me about the ones that were a bit of a waste of time and then kind of the ones that maybe took you to the next level.
Yeah, sure. So I'll start off with the waste of time ones. I mean, you could look at it as a waste of time, or I suppose, you know, if you wanted to take a glass half full, glass half empty approach, you could see it as, you know, you've learned something from it. With tipsters, something that, again, Pete Ling mentioned in one of your podcasts, that there are so many different tipsters out there. Finding, you know, quality tipsters is a challenge. But even if you found a quality tipster, it doesn't necessarily mean you can make a profit from the service. So I've found that I've subscribed to tipsters where I've done the research. You know, everything looks good. They're consistently profitable with a strike rate that I'm comfortable with. But what you find is they're a victim of their own success. So they're able to get the odds they're advertising, but I'm not. I'm not at my computer. Sometimes the odds will go within seconds and I lose out. So in the long run, my profit margin is much sharper. I know, I mean, there's, you know, there are some people who kind of strongly just don't feel tipsters offer anything. I'm not quite that extreme. I think there are good tipsters out there. I think there's people with lots of knowledge you can learn from. But it is a challenge, you know, and you also have to have it relative to your bank. If you've got a high bankroll, a lot of these tipster services, you know, they barely make a dent in your bank. But if you're betting smaller stakes, you know, 10, 20 pounds, euros, a point, then, you know, you're going to feel more frustrated when you get these losing months. And things like, for example, horse racing is quite popular. You know, there's lots of tipster services out there. But horse racing has, you know, in general, most services have a low strike rate. If you have a low strike rate, you're going to go on long losing runs. So, you know, you could go weeks without being in profit, and it's tough. You know, you have to have a mindset to overcome that and expect that you're going to go on these bad losing runs and you will come out on the other side. But a lot of people make the mistake of again cancelling these services. So with me, again, that's frustrating. I do like to have, you know, reasonable strike rate, kind of closer to 50%, 40 to 50% on some of my strategies. But you know, it's not always achievable. So yeah, in terms of tipsters, that's been a frustration. There's been lots of books I've read, interesting books, lots of theory, but trying to put it into practice isn't always possible. There's particular things that maybe don't work as well in the markets anymore. So for example, pre-race trading is something I've kind of dabbled in. But you know, I just have to hold my hands up and say it's probably not for me. It's just not suited to my betting style, my skill set, you know, whatever. I'm just not very good at it. But the market's moved on as well from when people wrote about pre-race trading, and now with all the bots and automation that's in the market, it's very difficult. There are people who have the skill to do it, but it's very tough, and it's very tough to learn. So, you know, I think that, you know, that's the case for a lot of services. You know, they will advertise the earth, they'll promise the world, they'll highlight, you know, when they've made these profitable months. They don't mention the losses along the way. They kind of conveniently forget, you know, about those kind of things. But it's important to know, you know, that these things do happen. But in terms of things that have actually helped in my betting journey, I think, again, you know, I've read a few books related to mindset. A lot of stuff is transferable from financial trading. So, you know, interesting books on trading, finance will apply to trading the betting markets and you know, the kind of mindset and the psychology behind it. So that's, you know, been enormously beneficial. I think in terms of strategies, some of my best strategies have come by accident. I think this is what maybe a lot of pro gamblers find, is that maybe they focus on a particular market, but they find an edge or a quirk or something that they weren't expecting. And then, you know, with a bit more investigation, that's what they find. So for me, you know, that's one of my edges, is on is a horse racing edge that was completely by accident. It was kind of a chance conversation with someone who ran a group, a Telegram group, you know, based on this kind of theory. And that was a big part of the reason I felt confident to go pro. So, and again, you know, stuff with match betting, those kind of things are a staple of my income. You know, these kind of things are quite useful, have been very useful for me, and a big part of why I felt confident enough to go pro. So I've kind of, yeah, again, wasted time with lots of things. You can make this quite complicated. You know, betting, trading can be as complicated as you want it to be, but that doesn't necessarily make it more profitable. More complicated doesn't mean more profit. Sometimes the best strategies are the simplest ones. For me, some of my most profitable strategies are actually very simple. You know, you don't need a huge amount of knowledge to actually execute them. You don't need a lot of research time to do it. You know, so they're kind of, in a way, you know, quite lazy strategies, but they work. You know, and sometimes if you build big, complicated models, and I've tried, you know, with some, you know, statistics and things like that to add these layers, and then you find that it doesn't actually work in practice.
Yeah, and touching back on what you said about tipsters, I think it's important to note that there are so many tipsters out there. There are probably millions out there, but it's only really like maybe it's a very, very small percentage. You'd have to say something around 1% that actually work, and that if you are going to look at using a tipster, it needs to be at the minimum reviewed by an independent reviewer, like a smart betting club like Pete Ling that we had on in episode 24, I believe. Because I was really surprised. I mean, I was very pessimistic about tipsters until I talked to him. But the depth at which he and Smart Betting Club go to of looking into their track records, like the length of their track records, Monte Carlo simulations, closing line, p-values, all this kind of stuff. Like it's very in depth. So, I mean, I don't know how many reviewers there are out there, but I think for me, you'd have to at least be verified by something like a Smart Betting Club if you were looking at using a tipster. But you just got to be very cautious of those kind of things, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think something he mentioned as well is not necessarily everyone, you know, good. There are good tipsters who haven't heard of SBC as well. So there are still, you know, good ones out there who, for whatever reason, haven't been verified. But it definitely helps, you know, as a customer. I think Toby as well has recently done a review, you know, on Punter to Pro about SBC. And, you know, it's great. It's a kind of quality control because, you know, it is a kind of murky industry. The kind of, you know, the copywriting, you know, as a marketing expert yourself, you know, you can kind of see what, you know, what they try and do there to kind of rope you in. And it's very convincing. You know, I'm quite as kind of skeptical, you know, miserable git at the best of times. So I read a lot of things with skepticism, but I get roped in. You know, people do get roped in because it sounds convincing, it sounds authentic, it sounds genuine. You know, the really skilled copy with some of these tipsters. And like I said, in many cases, you know, there is a plan there, but some people explain their results as kind of variance over, you know, the period of a few years. maybe it won't even out. So even, you know, following a tipster for a year, they might have a bad losing year. So something like football, for example, the ROI is so low on that, you know, compared to other sports, that it could well be that there's a tipster out there who has a bad year, but bounces back and has, you know, three really good profitable years in a row. But if you've subscribed for a year, you've followed every selection for a week, and you've done 1,000 selections, you've come out with a loss, it's a horrible feeling as a punter. How likely are you to put your faith in, there being a turnaround the year after, you know? And again, it's Murphy's Law. You might just sign up to a service. I've got a few services that I'm kind of trialing at the moment, and there's a couple of them I don't think I'll continue. But probably what's going to happen is, the month that I stop, they're going to go on storm on and make, loads of profit, loads of winners. It's just the nature of the game, I think. The difference between looking at it recreationally, looking at it in a professional way is, you need a huge sample size. I think something you mentioned to Nenko in the Church of Betting when you did a podcast with him was there was a tennis tipster out there who, has a huge, huge profit over thousands of bets, but hasn't actually beaten, the closing line on his bet. So, what's going on there? It's not easy, finding the right services. But the good thing is, now with Twitter, with, so many good betting blogs out there, there's so much free information that you can kind of teach yourself, and you can kind of really get to a very competent level. Once you get to that stage, you really can sort of start looking into, maybe courses and things to develop your knowledge. But it's, if you have the time, if you have the desire, the determination, you can definitely do it. You don't necessarily need tipsters to do that. You might think it saves you time and it might make you profit, but you have to be very careful. Do your research about the tipster. Does it actually suit your schedule? Can you actually get the bets on in time? Is there a lot of variance in their selection? So you kind of need to think about all these questions before you sign up to any service or course. And, really, you have to treat all of it as an investment of your time and your money, not just kind of buy everything that's out there.
Yeah, no, great insight, mate. And I've really enjoyed today's chat, especially the stuff talking about Middle East. I found fascinating, and also, your journey from, punter to pro, I guess, to take Toby Aldis's mantle. it's been fantastic, mate. Where can people find you? Where can people find what you're writing, where you're writing your articles, and also on Twitter and stuff like that?
So I've just signed up to the world of Twitter. I'm still not very good at it, but forgive me. But you can find me, it's at My Bettor Life, Bettor with an O, and I have a sort of website blog as well, which is the same thing, mybettorlife.com. Send me a message, or have a look at the blog if you want to have a read. I post articles from there from time to time, look forward to hearing from you. So if anyone has any more questions or anything, I'll be happy to help out.
Yeah, and make sure everyone, you check out some of the articles Neil's written on our blog so far.
Oh, yeah, and later, as well,
of course, mate. Come on, mate, give us a plug. On Wednesday, so this will come out on Monday, so a couple days after this comes out, there will be a video of Neil using TradeMate for the first month, using TradeMate Pro. So that'll be a really interesting insight into how he's going with us. That's about it. Next podcast that comes out will be on Thursday. We'll be doing a preview of the Champions League final and the Europa League final, maybe some other stuff too, back with Haru and George. Thanks for listening, everyone. Make sure you do a quick rate and review of the podcast and subscribe to us wherever you listen to our podcast. And if you're looking to implement some of the strategies we talked about, not really, some of the value betting strategies we talk about on the podcast every week, make sure you start a free week trial of TradeMate Sports and start your value betting journey. But Neil, mate, thanks once again for coming on.
Yeah, cheers for having me, Alex. Speak to you soon.